And these are people from outside these people, it looks like?
Yeah, I don't, it's probably not, it's not a photo of that, is it?
Sure, why not?
Should we get some Michelin's?
Yeah, people don't have.
I think someone.
Someone's bringing them. I think. Everybody that was waiting is here, right? And then the downstairs is here.
So just the one. There's, I think, one more person on the go.
All right. So we are at the end. Oh, I just got some. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, we are at the end of towards the end of Perek Chafes. And it's interesting, if you look at the Pasuk Chaf, it's a little before that. It actually starts, it's really a unit of speech that starts from Pasuk Yedzayim. It's Hat Aznecha, incline your ear, Ushma Divrei Chachamim, listen to the words of the wise. Libcha tashis ladati, place your heart to understand what I'm teaching you. Ki na'im, ki sisrim bebitnacha, that they should be pleasant, that you guard them in your insides. Now again, the Gra pointed out that this is part of the message. This isn't simply saying the message should be pleasant, but rather the message is that Torah and Yiddishkeit should be a source of pleasure. That if a person has too much tsar in Avodas Hashem, that is a sign that their Avodas Hashem is not correct. If Duas Hashem b'simcha means, the way some people translate it, when you serve Hashem, that will give you joy. It's a little different. It's not serve Hashem in joy, but if Duas Hashem, when you serve Hashem, there will be simcha. If you don't have simcha, there is something wrong in the way you're serving Hashem. And that's what the Gra says, ki na'im, and then, the next verse was also a very important thought of the Gra. Liyais b'Hashem miftachacha. That in God alone should be your trust. In God we trust. Remember the very important yisayit that the Gra says? The Gra says that the tachlis of all of the Torah, the end's purpose, the reason, is that we should have bitachon in Hashem. Again, as I said last week, this is not easy to understand. I mean, how can I say, I'm learning Cheskes Abatim, so I should have Bitachon in Hashem. I'm learning Shor Shanoga Chesapora, so I should have Bitachon in Hashem. If I'm supposed to have, if learning is supposed to be Bitachon in Hashem, so I should learn Chavis Alababas, Shar HaBitachon, which I should anyway. But obviously, what's going on here is a more mystical idea, and that is, as you become closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you become dovuk to Him by absorbing His Ratzon, because remember, Hashem's Atzmius, Hashem's essence, I cannot connect to, because Hashem's essence is above any possible Hasaga. But what did Hashem do? Hashem concretized His essence. These are just words, but He concretized His essence in the Ratzon, His will, as expressed in the Torah. So when I learn His will, when I bring His will into my head, when I learn and I take knowledge of Hashem's will into my mind, I am absorbing the Atzmius of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into my mind. So really, it makes no difference if it's Shorsh Nagach HaSapara or anything else. It's the Ratzon Hashem. And Memeila, the Gra says, as you become closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you realize He is the source of life. And then you have Bitachon. So the ultimate purpose of life is to have Bitachon. Right? There is nothing as great as Bitachon. And this is an important insight that the Gra says, again, his Lashon is, seconds. Ikar kol hu bitachon hashalem, for hu klal kol hamitzvos. It is the klal. It is the general principle that emerges from all of the mitzvos. Okay, then it goes on. Pasuk chaf. Halo kasafti lecha. Like Shlomo is speaking, or it's like a father speaking to a son. Behold, have I not written to you shalishim. Now what is the word shalishim? B'moetzos, with good advice, v'das, and knowledge. So shalishim is a lashon of nobility. For whatever reason, it's not entirely clear what the etymology is. Shalish is normally, comes from three. But shalishim, you find even in the Chumash itself, referred to nobles or heads of armies or the like. So shalishim refers to, I've given you sayings of nobility. But it's interesting that some mefarshim al pi pshat, because you'll notice there's a kri and a ksiv here. Mm-hmm. Although the ksiv doesn't necessarily improve it. The ksiv does not have a yud after the lamed, although it does have a vav. But some want to read that the kesiv is a form of shaloshim. Although, if it's shaloshim, that would explain the omission of the first yud, but that would not explain the vav. And they point out, I didn't take the time to actually count it, that if you count the mamarim from here into the next parak, really going until Perek Chafei, which is the beginning of a new sefer. Chafei is a new sefer, right? Perek Chafei begins with Gamei L'Mishlei Shloma. So some Mefarshim have actually said, al pi pshat, that this was a later addition to the book of Mishlei, which contains 30 sayings. And if you count from this to the beginning of Chafei, you will have 30 sayings. So they actually learn shiloshim and the like. Now, let me just hasten to add that I know that Ben Terry's instinctive reaction when I say later edition is dealing with apikorsis and kfira. But that absolutely is not the case, because in the book of Mishlei itself, it acknowledges that there were later editions. Now, the later editions don't mean they're not from Shlomo HaMelech. For example, we say, well, Perek Chafei itself. Look at the beginning of Perek Chafei. Perek Chafei itself is a later edition. Gam Eile Mishlei Shlomo Asher Hetiku Anshe Chizkia Melech Yehuda. Now, Chizkia Melech Yehuda, who was a very righteous king, was 100 years after Shlomo HaMelech. More than maybe 200 years. Yeah, between 150 and 200 years after Shlomo HaMelech. Now, what happened was that his chachamim took various assorted sayings of Shlomo that had not been in the sefer called Mishlei, and they put it back in. They put it in. Okay, you'll also remember, we went through this a long time ago. We did the end part of the sefer first. That the end of the sefer has proverbs of Ogur bin Yoke and Lemuel, and although Rashi al pi Chazal say these are pseudonyms for Shlomo, but the Vilna Gaon says not. The Vilna Gaon says quite, this is another person of which we know nothing, called Ogur bin Yoke, that the Anshei Knesset HaGdola were mechaber to Mishlei. Right? So the concept that, again, in the Torah Chas V'Shalom, we can't say that, but even then, the last day Pesukim, Yoshua, according to one opinion, okay, but beyond the last day Pesukim, there is no Havamino like that. But in various books of Ksuvim, we can acknowledge that there were later editions. And just like, for example, when we say the Zohar, we say, was written by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Now the problem is that you have passages in the Zohar that quote, Amorayim, Amorayim, Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel lived after Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So somebody might say, well, Shmuel Rechai knew what they were going to say with Ruach HaKodesh, but the emes is, there's no reason to be madchik that. Because when you say somebody was the author, least if it's a human being. You're not saying Hashem was the author. You're saying this person wrote it with Ruach HaKodesh or whatever. You're not saying he was the author of every single word. He was the author of the main body of the text, and there are going to be Haisafos that come afterwards. That's not a stira. The Talmud Yerushalmi is credited to Rabbi Yochanan. And yet, in the Talmud Yerushalmi, there are many Amoraim that we know lived after Rabbi Yochanan. The answer was, he was the core. Talmud Bavli, Ravina and Rav Ashi. And yet we know that the generation after Ravina and Rav Ashi, that are called the Saboraim, they're very unknown group. They are between the Amoraim and the Gaonim. But the Saboraim were the actual editors. In fact, a lot of discussions in the Gemara are from the Saboraim. They're post Ravina and Rav Ashi. But that's not a steer. Ravina and Rav Ashi were the main authors, and then there was editorial. In fact, then they say, as a Derech Klal, when the Gemara goes on, it's interesting why the Saboraim thought it was such an important inyan. That Derech Klal, sometimes at the beginning of a Masechta, you have extensive grammatical discussions. So, for example, at the beginning of Masechta's Kedushin, the Gemara discusses why sometimes you say Derochim, right? Isha Niknes B'Sholosh Derochim, and sometimes you say Devorim, and it brings other Mishnayos, and sometimes what is Zohar and what is Nekeva? Is it Shalosh or Shalosha? And there's like a blot and a half discussion of those grammatical things. Or sometimes, like in Maseches Nedarim, it discusses when the Mishnah gives you a list. Some things are this, some things are this, right? A, B, C, D, and then it explains the list. So sometimes, after it enumerates A, B, C, D, it explains the last thing first and goes backwards. So it's A, B, C, D, we will now explain D, C, B, A. And sometimes we list A, B, C, D, and we will explain it A, B, C, D. And the Gemara has a discussion. When do you do that? When do you do not do that? Things like those types of pratim. So the Rishayim say that those discussions, by and large, are from Rabbanan Saburai. Even things like Hilchasa, because the Gemara B'Derech Klal doesn't paskin halacha. But sometimes we'll say at the end, Hilchasa Kev. That's not from Ravina Rav Ashi, that's from the Saburayim, or even the Gaonim. And in fact, the Rishayim say, we have a freedom not to follow them, since that's not the Gemara itself. We can go, we can paskin keneged what the Gemara says, Hilchasa Kev. So all I'm trying to show is that, you know, it's not an instinctive, you know, apikorsis to say that things were added later. And the same way Perek Chafei is a later addendum. Now again, it is Shlomo HaMelech's work, but it was added to the Book of Mishlei. So too, some of Forshim want to say that these were 30 sayings that were added. And indeed, if they people have counted, they've been able to count 30 sayings, which is actually very, very interesting. But the mainstream Meforshim, including the Gra, do not go with that. And they interpret Sholishim as words of nobility. And in fact, the Gra says that Sholishim and Moedsos Vadas, in other words, I have given you noble words, the Moedsos, with wise advice, and Das, and spiritual knowledge. The Gra says over here that is a remez to the Nevi'im and the Kesuvim, because he says Das is Torah, that is the Das of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Mo'etzos, wise advice, is the Tochacha that we get from the Nevi'im. So in effect, Shlomo HaMelech is saying, hey, it's not just Mishlei that is the source of guidance, the Torah itself and the words of the Nevi'im are the noble words that will bring a person to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's how he learns. Moatzos Vidas, Moatzos is Lashon Rabim, good advice. Because advice in English doesn't have a plural. You don't say advices, whatever it is. But Moatzos in Hebrew, Eitzos, is counsels, plural. That refers to Nevi'im and Kesuvim. And Das is the pure Das of Hashem, which is Torah. Okay, so skipping down a little bit, Okay, we'll just read the psukim sort of quickly. Just to see. Right, so what do we say? Al tik zol dal perik pasuk chafes. Al tik zol dal ki dalhu. V'al tidake ani b'shar. So first, the word dal and the word ani, of course, are two words that mean a poor person. But what is the difference between a dal and an ani? So here, the Vilna Gaon says, although this is carried from some chazals, because many chazals say dal is the absolute lowest of the low. Here the Gra says exactly the opposite. He says a dal is an ashir that has fallen on hard times, but he still has something. And as a result, you are tempted to steal from him. Because he has something to steal. He still has a house, he still has furniture, he still has a nice lamp. Now, stealing here, again, it's not so much that we necessarily need to be told, don't steal. That's in the Torah. You know, they told the Maisa with the Kutzker Rebbe. That the Kutzker Rebbe was a Hasidic Rebbe, a very, very famous, very enigmatic Hasidic Rebbe. He was the father-in-law of the Avnei Nezer. It's very interesting that the Avnei Nezer, who was an absolute well-known Gadol B'Torah, Avnei Nezer is one of the great poskim, especially in Hilchos Shabbos. He wrote the Sefer Eglei Tal, one of the great poskim in Hilchos Shabbos. He writes in the Hakdama to the Eglei Tal that all of his growth in Torah is due to his father-in-law, the famous Menachem Mendel of Kutz. So, people think because it was only a Hasidic Rebbe. He was a great, great Gadol B'Torah. But the Kutzker Rebbe was a very, 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 very difficult person to understand. There was a long period of his life in which he went into total isolation. He refused to see anybody except once in a while the Avnei Nezer he would see. And because he felt that he didn't have any real Hasidim, he didn't have people who were Obed Hashem. He didn't like the idea that people would go to a Rebbe for a shortcut, you know, to this and that. So he would lock himself in a room, like, the whole day. And there would be, you know, tens of Hasidim that would just hang around, waiting for him to come out. And, like, every once in a while he would come out, he would speak for a minute and then go back in. And sometimes he would say, it stinks in here. You know, he would walk out and say, this is not a world I want, you know, whatever. And so the Kutzker Rebbe was a difficult person. Well, difficult meaning a person that was on a madrega that's difficult for us to fully understand. But the story goes that an earlier time in his life, when he was not separated so much, so he had many Hasidim. In fact, what happened basically was that he thought too many people were being superficial and he didn't want to be part of it. But he had many, many, many Hasidim, and the house was open. And people would come in and they would take things. They would see in fact, they would even take things L'shem Shemayim. They took souvenirs. It wasn't so much they wanted to steal money, but that, oh, I can take the Rebbe's Chanukah menorah. It's a krum cheshbon. It's absolutely a perverse cheshbon. But I'll tell you, Rebbe Yashiv's menorah was stolen many times. Rebbe Yashiv would light outside and people took the menorah. Now, why? Maybe some guy took it because it was silver. I don't know. I don't know what it was. But I'll tell you the truth. Some people have a krum cheshbon. It's a wonderful thing for me to have the menorah of the Gadol HaDor in my house. So people were taking stuff from the Kutzker Rebbe's house. So I think the Rebbetzin was complaining, you know, so many things are missing. So the Gabbai said to the Rebbetzin, he says, well, what do you expect? Why should there be anything in this house? The house is open all the time. Why shouldn't people take things? So the Kutzker Rebbe like screams, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said Lo Signov. Isn't that enough? What do you mean? Why shouldn't people take things? He says, you know, okay. So the pshat of this pasuk is not so much don't steal, because first of all, I mean, What is being added to the Chumash itself? I mean, Mishle is not just going to tell me, don't steal. But it basically means it's more of a deeper way, and that is, don't take advantage of people when they're in a vulnerable situation. So, for example, if a person was wealthy and he lost his wealth, so you might think, let's say I'm an investment counselor or I'm a stockbroker. Right? So I might say, you know, you invest with me, I can have this deal and that deal. And your kavana might be good, but you're bedafka trying to get him to invest because you know that he's weak and he's not going to check you out so much. And you know that if he'd be in a better place, he would think twice about this. So you could rationalize to yourself, I'm not doing anything wrong. But really, you're stealing from a person because he's in a weak, vulnerable matzav. And that's also a form of gezeila. But the Vilna Gaon says, you're able to steal from him, meaning take his money or whatever, because he's still a dal. Meaning he has something. It's like, this is the situation, by the way, of the whole nobility in Great Britain is basically this way. These are, you know, the dukes and the earls, all of those folk. And some of them are very rich, but a lot of them are really totally bankrupt. They have nothing. But they still own the big castle. And it's an awful thing. It's quite expensive to own a big castle. You talk about the heating bill and the electric bill. So there's actually economic crisis. You know, it's not so easy to be a duke. You might think, oh, be a duke. If only I'd be a duke. You know, it's not at all easy. And they have to figure out ways of having tours and parties, and they rent it out for bar mitzvahs and chasanas and weddings and all sorts of things. And they only live. Imagine you have this big castle, and you kind of like, you have to limit yourself like to one bedroom and one bathroom, like less room than you'd have in an apartment, because they have to like rent it out, because they push it cannot afford, right? So these are kind of the rich people, or the formerly rich people. Who you can take advantage of. Now, the Ani, the Gra says, now again, it is for care from Chazal, so it's a Tzarechi in here. Ani, the Gra says, is someone who's hit rock bottom. So it's not Shayach to steal from the Ani, because the Ani has no Nechasim that you can steal from. But to Dakei is, don't crush his spirit. Because how do you steal from an Ani? You don't steal his money. He doesn't have money. But you steal his sense of importance, meaning you make him seem like a nobody, like an insignificant person. He doesn't count. You've crushed his nefesh, and therefore both things. Don't take economic advantage of people when they're in a weak place, and don't crush the spirit of someone by making him feel that because he doesn't have money, he doesn't count. And this was again. This is a situation that does exist. These are actual stories. You know, Maaseh Shayah. They don't do it so much today. I haven't seen it in Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, but in the United States, you know, synagogues sell high holiday tickets. You have to buy a ticket. Now, today it's not fanatic. But when I remember growing up specifically. That if you went to the bathroom in order to get back into the show, you had to present the ticket. They had these guys standing there with the ticket, you know. And if you didn't have the ticket, you know, it was really meshugim. You actually had to have a ticket that they took it. Now, Baruch Hashem, at least Achshir Dore, you know, you simply have to pay money or whatever. They don't really check the ticket, you know. But they have situations where people who were indigent or people who couldn't afford a ticket. They would like put them sometimes in the basement where they could hear from the ceiling, they could hear the tefillos and the like. In other words, in a way that it was recognizable that, you know, you're poor, so we put you in the lowest place. And that is, you know, crushing a person's spirit, humiliating them because they're poor. And we know that if you're malbim pnei chavero, it's as if you killed them. That's really what the next pasuk says. When you take advantage of the weak and the powerless, because they can't fight back, and you think, who's going to criticize me? Hashem yariv rivam. Hashem will fight for them. Like people say, oh, wait till my big brother comes home, right? So they have a big brother that's a lot more powerful than anyone else's big brother, and that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo v'atzmai. And what happens? Kava es kovehem nafesh. Now the word kava is a very, very interesting biblical word. In Chazal, in the Mishnah, l'gvoa is to make something permanent. So we talk about kevius seuda, to be koveya, to establish a permanent seuda. Sometimes that very word is used in a negative sense. The Mishnah says in Brachos, Al tas tfilascha keva, or keva. Do not make your prayer permanent. What does it mean, do not make your prayer permanent? Permanent means a rote, a mechanical thing that you got to go through every day. But in both meanings, whether it's positive or negative, right, kevias means to make something permanent. However, and again, it's an interesting question, how do you get from this to that? Because in Nevi'im and Ksuvim, the word kava is, I believe, never used that way. And kava is used to refer to stealing. Right? Stealing something, taking something that is not yours, is called likvoa. The Navi Malachi, in the Haftarah for Shabbos HaGadol, says, Hashem says, Atem kavatem osi, you have stolen from me. V'amartem, and you will say back to Hashem, V'ma keva anucha, what have we stolen from you? And Hashem's answer is, Hamaser v'hatruma, because the maser and the truma, I obligate you to give to Kohanim and Levim. I own it. I own it. That is what I said you give. And you're not giving it to where I told you to give it. You are stealing from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the Lashon Likvoa is actually a Lashon of stealing. And in this context, that's actually exactly what it means. V'kava es kovehem nafesh. God will steal, as it were, from those who have stolen from the dal and the oni, whether it's the money or whether it's the sense of chashivas. God will steal by taking one's own nefesh, meaning, God forbid, oppressing the poor can result in a person, Hashem, stealing their life. Kavas kavet. Now, based on this, the Ma'vit has a very interesting pshat. The Gemara in Shabbos says that after 120 years, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to ask us six questions. Right? Six questions. What a chesed. We know the final exam. Ahead of time, you can mamish study for the final exam. And the first question is Nasasa v'nasata b'yamuna. So the normal pshat is, did you conduct your business affairs with emuna? Now, even here, just to digress, it's not, because I want to get to the second question. The word emuna is an interesting double entendre. Emuna can mean with honesty and integrity. Were you honest in your business? Emuna can also mean faith in Hashem. But it's all b'hatalia. It's the same idea. Because if you really believe that Hashem is the one that gives you parnasa, then by definition, you'll never come out ahead by being dishonest. And because a cheshbon that dishonesty will give me harvacha is only shaykh if I say Hashem is not in charge. Now, what does that mean? You'll ask me, maisim b'chol yayim, that dishonest people can get away with huge profit. Okay, in the short term, that could be true. But number one, either it'll eventually be totally lost, or there may be expenses, can they get the profit? Meaning, in the long run of things, like every sinner, you can get away with things in the short run. In the long run, it's not going to be a bracha. Now, the second question is, kavata itim l'tayra. So how do we interpret kavata? Did you set aside regular times to learn Torah? And even that translation is very significant. The Ma'bit writes, even if you're a person who learns every day, you learn the whole day. But kavata ita means you have to set aside at least a short time of every day in which no matter what, you're not mevata. So if I learn 6 hours a day or 10 hours a day, but sometimes there's this and that and that and that and that. Kviyas ita matar means there has to be something in which nothing short of Achiv Avelis or something, you know, it's Achiv where you're not allowed to learn Tisha B'Av, you know. That's Kviyas Itim L'Torah. But some add to the Ma'bit, I'm not sure, I don't remember if the Ma'bit himself says it, that maybe Kavata could mean what it means in Mishle. Kavata Did you steal time for Torah? Did you steal it? Because what's the pshat? People come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they say, I didn't have time, I had so much business, I had so many things, I had my family to take care of, I had my brother to take care of. In the normal way a day works, I didn't have time. But the answer is, you got to steal the time. Kavata, you have to steal the time. So the Imamish said that it doesn't just mean that you set aside regular times, but did you steal the times for Torah? The third question, just to give you the list so you'll know the, remember the questions, is were you Isaac in period of Arivia? Did you attempt to try to have children, to bring children into the world? The fourth is Sipisa li Yeshua. Did you eagerly await the coming of Mashiach? Not did you believe in Mashiach. Believe? Okay, I believe in Mashiach. But was I yearning for Mashiach? Did I wake up and say, oh yeah, I'm just waiting for Mashiach? It's a high madrega, it's not just a budget. And the fifth is more abstract. Were you mefalpel in wisdom? Meaning, besides learning information, did you try to be mefalpel, try to understand the wisdom that you were learning? And the sixth is even more abstract. Bikashta das. Did you seek knowledge? But das actually means emotional and spiritual connection with HaKadosh Baruch. Meaning, you learned the Torah, but did you seek by learning Torah to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch? Bikashta das. Because das is the chibur, is the, just like Adam and Chava, the biblical chibur. Marital intimacy is called das. Das is mechaber with Hashem. Now I'll just tell you a little horror, which is actually very good for people who teach and learn Daf Yomi. Tysus asks a very strong kasha. Tysus asks that here the Gemara says kavata itim l'Torah is question number two. But there's another Gemara that says Ein techilas dinai shel adam ela aldivar aldivrei Torah. The first thing a person is judged for is whether he learned Torah properly. So that means that seems to be Bittul Torah's question one, not question. So Tosfos says, well, it's a dice, it's hard to understand. Well, Torah is the second question, but Bittul Torah is the first punishment, which means. But why that should be so is not at all clear. Meaning to say, you're asked these six questions, but Hashem will punish you on question two before he punishes you on question one. But the Gra, they say, shame the Gra, Gvaldigapshat. The Gra says like this. The Gra says, in reality, although the Gemara is Kipshuta, that these are distinct questions, but on another level, all six questions are really referring to Torah. There's Hashem is asking six questions about learning. And therefore, Einachinami, Techilas Dino Shaladim is Al Dibrei Torah. All six questions are about learning. What's the pshat? Because every Seder of the Torah, of the Mishnah, has its own nickname. Seder Zeraim, about agriculture, is called Seder Amuna. Amuna because the farmer sees how much Amuna he needs because the rain and the sun, he knows it's not up to him. So Mamela Masasa Vinasata Bi Amuna. Did you learn Seder Zeraim? Seder Amuna. Now the second Seder is Moed, about the Shabbos and Yom Tov. That's called Itim, times. Kavata Itim L'Taira. Did you learn the Taira of the times? The third Seder is Seder Nashim, marriage. Asakta Bepiria Verivia. The fourth order is Nezikin. Now Nezikin is in fact called by Chazal Seder Yeshua, or Seder Yeshuais. Why? Because we're told that Seder Nezikin, which gives me all of the halachas bein Adam l'chaveiro, creates shalom and harmony and peace, and that brings geula because Chorban came because of Sinas Chinam. When we learn to live the shalom, we bring geula. So it's called Yeshua. See, peace of Yeshua. Were you eager to have Yeshua by learning Nezikin? Pilpalta b'chachma. Seder Kachim is called Seder Chachma. Indeed, we have from other Gemaras. It's not just from this. The Gemara that Chachma, because it's very deep, it's very amok. Seder Kachim. And finally, Das is the Taras HaNefesh, the purity of the soul. That's Seder Taras. So, according to the Gra, it's not, Taisus is Kasha's Mamish Miyoshev. In other words, what's the Kasha? Taras is only question number two, but it says, Ein Techilas Dina Shalodam. The answer is no. All six questions are about Torah. So those are the first questions that you get asked.
What was the last question?
Bikashta Das. Were you a seeker of Das? Seder Tyrus is Das. Yeah. Now, but the reason why I say this is very relevant for Daf Yomi is because you see that according to the Gra, the breakdown of questions are not simply asking, did you learn Torah? But there's a specific question. Did you learn Zerayim? Did you learn Moed? Did you learn Nashim? Did you learn Nezikin? Did you learn Kachim? Did you learn Taras? By the way, Chavetz Chaim has another measure step. Did you learn Taras Kohen? It continues down the list as well. But even going with what the Gemara says, according to the Gra. So you see that there's a special chashivas in not just learning, which of course anything you learn is tremendously important, but in finishing Shas, in knowing Shas, and that's the Milo of Daf Yomi that at least you get to cover it. But even Daf Yomi is, in and of itself, is not complete because Daf Yomi, its original cycle at least, does not do the Mishnayos in Zerayim. It only does what there's a Gemara in. So it doesn't do the Mishnayos of Zerayim after Brachos, and it doesn't do the Mishnayos in Taharos. So some people say, everyone has modifies it. There are Daf Yomis that modify. I think they add. The truth of the matter is, even if you did one mission, if you did one Mishnah three times a week in 7.5 years, you certainly would finish. You'd finish the. But whatever. So they add. I think maybe two Mishnayos or something. Other Daf Yomis actually add. They add like an Amud of Yushalmi. It's interesting. The Yushalmi is like half. They worked out a luach. It's intricate. But the Yushalmi is half the size of the Bavli. So if you do a blot of Bavli a day, and you do an Amud of Yushalmi, you finish. Of course, it may not be the same Masechta, but you finish the same time. So people were recommending that. They're different Seirufim to what you do. But the point basically is that you do see that there's an inyan of trying to finish the Siddurim of the Torah Shebaal Peh in that way. Why did I bring this? The only reason I brought this up is because the Kava is Kaldeim. I wanted to show you that in Mishle, and really throughout Tanakh, in Malachi, Likvoa means to steal. Now, the only question is, I just wonder where the etymologies come from, meaning to say, how do you go? Now, we discussed years ago already, a word like arum. Okay? So arum means naked, and arum means cunning. Hanachash haya arum, the nachash was arum, and cunning in turn is sometimes a positive word and sometimes a negative word. It sometimes means deceitful, and it sometimes means someone who can see through deceit. Now, how is that connected to nakedness? So that already you could actually see this, because when a person is cunning, he can see through the fakery that people are doing, right? So in a sense, it wouldn't be he's naked so much, but it would mean that he could see the nakedness in others. But how do you get from likvoa to mean steal to likvoa to establish permanence? It's not clear to me. I mean, on one level, of course, a thief is trying to establish a permanent bilus over something, but that could just as well refer to a legitimate owner too. So I'm not sure what would be miyuchat of the idea of permanency with theft. So that I'm not sure I understand what the connection is, but it is important to know that this is a dramatic example of the Lashon of Chazal being different than the Lashon of the Pasuk. And again, the Gemara says in a lot of places, Lashon Mikra L'chud, V'Lashon Chachamim L'chud. Their use of Hebrew is not always the same. Okay.
Siddurim Alav Yabali.
forgotten?
Say again? Couldn't hear you.
I'm asking why they're missing Zeroyim, and is it for...
Oh, why there's no Gemara in it?
I've forgotten.
You know, we don't really know. Now, people want to answer, people want to say, well, first of all, there are many Gemaras about Zeroyim, there's no question. No, in the Bavli, there are many discussions in the Bavli about Truma and Meiser. There are many, but there is nothing on the Mishnayos themselves. So people want to say, well, that's because it wasn't Nogeil Lemaisa in Bavli, but to her that's very fair, because you have the Bavli on Kachim, Sevachim, Menachos, and for Keret, we don't have a Yerushalmi on those, you know. So I don't know. It's not clear to me. I mean, it might have been lost. You know, for example, the Rambam says that there was a Yerushalmi on Kachim that was lost, and this is a whole famous, interesting story. That around 150 years ago, there was a fellow who claimed to have discovered a lost Talmud Yerushalmi on Chulin and Bechoros. Imagine this, a newly discovered Gemara. And he then published it, and he wrote a Perish like Rashi, and a Perish like Tosfos. And he got Haskamas from some very, very famous Gedolim, who said this was a wonderful, wonderful thing. Zehayom Asa Hashem, Nogila V'Nismachavah. His name was Rav Shlomo Friedlander, and he must have been quite a brilliant person to be able to write a Gemara al pi the Loshon and the Signon of the Yerushalmi and the like. But eventually it was discovered that it was a forgery. They say the Rugachever claimed it was a forgery because he said that every Masechet in Bavli and Yerushalmi mentions one Amira who's not mentioned anywhere else. There'll be one name that's only mentioned there, and in this there was no one who was not mentioned somewhere else. Whatever. But anyway, the person, it turned out to be a forgery. So you can actually get, I mean, they don't sell it in farm stores, but you know, you can actually find this Yerushalmi on Kutcher. I mean, as far as we're concerned, that's unfortunately a totally worthless work. I mean, because he made up quotes and the like, or he took, or something. I'm sorry,
it proven that he was forgery, or just because of this one?
No, that itself wouldn't have been enough of the proof. I think what happened was that people investigated, and then, yeah, and it was just well established. It was not his only forgery. There were, and this is an interesting psychological issue. We've had some very, very brilliant people who were into forgeries. I don't know what it was. It's a strange phenomenon. What do they say? They say that what really got him was he had to tell somebody about it, because if you're so successful, you have to tell somebody. So, what do they say? They tell the story about the rabbi who was a golf addict, and the rabbi had to play golf before davening every day, okay? Even on Yom Kippur. So he goes to the golfing place on Yom Kippur. He walked. There was an Erev. You know, he didn't do any malacha per se. And it says the malachi asharis are in Shemayim, and they say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, we have to kill this man, this Russia, this person who's a Rav, and he's supposed to teach Torah, and he plays golf on Yom Kippur. He says, let's just midas adin should be mesucha, finish him off. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I have a better plan. Don't. So what happened was, the person gets a hole in one. So the malachi asharis says, this is the mita, this is that such a Russia gets such hatzlacha in the world, how could it be? And they say, who's he going to tell? You know. So that's the biggest einish. And the truth is, the Ksais HaChaisha says in the Hakdama, the Ksais HaChaisha talks about the idea of that all, it's not a question of boasting, it's more than that, it's deeper than that. That all the simcha that a person has in life, if he doesn't have anyone to share it with, the simcha is not full. That simcha has to be shared. Again, it's not a question of just boasting. You need to share simcha. So Memela, the story goes, this person had to share. Memela, chavra, chavra, chisla, you know, so eventually things get out, and it was a ziyaf. Another example of something which is maybe not so well established, most people say it is there is Shelus Tshuvas B'Samim Reish. Tshuva Sefer. And it is miyuches as tshuvas from the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher. It was printed in the 1700s, which is around 500 years after the Rosh, from a manuscript, the Sonim Rosh. But most people concluded that it was a forgery of a person. But I have to say that the Sonim Rosh is a more complicated issue than the fake Gemara. A fake Gemara that simply says Rabbi Yochanan says this, Rish Lakish says this, you know, is worthless because Rabbi Yochanan didn't say it. But the B'samim Rosh is very different. The B'samim Rosh is Mefalpil in Gemara and Rishonim. Now, if it would have been the words of Rabbeinu Asher, that would count for a tremendous amount. But you know, some people say, even if it's not the words of Rabbeinu Asher, it's the words of somebody else. Let's look at what he said. In other words, the actual material he's presenting is not forged. So Memela, paradoxically, even though the B'samim Rosh is largely regarded as a ziyuf, Paiskim still use the B'samim Rosh for discussions because they say, listen, he says what he says. He's mefalpel in Gemara Rishonim. And everything he says is not forged for us. The only thing that's forged is the identity. Right, so some people say, well, what do you mean? He says, you're going to learn Torah from a Shakran? I mean, how could you be Makabo, the Torah of somebody that was Meshachar? Okay, so that's an issue. But that also, B'samim Rosh is still, you see, Ruvadja uses B'samim Rosh, then he'll put in parentheses, Yesh Omrim She'eno Me'a Rosh, but it's not just Eino Me'a Rosh, it's an actual question of a forgery. Okay.
Do the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, do they cover all the Mishnayos?
Are they what?
Do they cover all the
Mishnayos? No, they do not. Now it's true, each one covers something that the other doesn't cover. So the Yerushalmi covers Zerayim, and the Bavli covers Kachim, most of Kachim, except for Kinim and Midah, part of, yeah, Kinim and most of Midas. No, all of Midas and half of Tanit. But neither of them cover most of Taharis. In fact, both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi only have a Gemara on Nida. So there's no Gemara on Taharis in either the Bavli or the Yerushalmi. And the Rambam doesn't even indicate it was lost. The only thing the Rambam says was lost is a Yerushalmi on Kutchim. The Rambam is made it. There was a Yerushalmi on Kutchim. Now, you know that there was an attempt, actually it's being continued now, actually. There was a big attempt to compile a Gemara on Maseches Tyrus based on Seder Tyrus based on Likudim, taking all the Gemaras. There's a lot of Gemaras, Bavli, Yerushalmi, Sifri, Tosefta, and putting it on the order of the Mishnah. And this is called Sidrei Taharos, and it was done by a very famous person, the Radzina Rebbe of Gershon Hanach Leiner. The Radzina Rebbe might be known. He was the first one who instituted the wearing of techeles in modern times. This was in the late 1800s. But the Radziner techeles is not the one that people use today. The Radziner techeles was from a cuttlefish. And he wrote many svarim on techeles. He's called the Bala techeles. But most people feel that his techeles, he was deceived by a chemist. The chemist actually added blue stuff to it. In other words, it wasn't a natural thing. But Breslovers wear, I think Breslovers still wear Razina Tchelis. So the Tchelis that Breslovers wear is not the Tchelis from the shellfish that the people who wear it wear it. But he was a very, very brilliant Iluyasha person. And what he did was, he wrote on Kalim and Ohalos. Kalim and Ohalos. Kalim is a huge perceptor. Kalim is 30 Brukin, and Ohalos is 18 Brukin. He compiled Mishnah and the Mishnah, Gemaras, including his own from Bavli, from Yerushalmi, from Tosefta, and he wrote a Rashi and a Tosos on it. But he didn't say it was a long lost Gemara. He said this is what he did. It's a Likutz, and it was very controversial because this was around the same time as the forged Yerushalmi and Kutchim. So people, so there were a lot of Gedolim that were absolutely against it. It's interesting, it's the whole thing that the Nitziv refused to give a Haskama to it. The Nitziv was the Rashi of the Lashon, so the Radziner sent it to the Nitziv's son, Rav Chaim Berlin. not telling him that the Tziv didn't want to give a haskama. Rav Chaim Berlin wrote a very enthusiastic haskama. And once Rav Chaim Berlin was maskim, the Tziv, who was going to write a letter of mocha, just said he wasn't going to say yes or no. He just, at least he forestalled the Tziv from being mocha. But just to give you an example, the biggest masechta in Babli, Bava Basra, is what, 174 blat. Maseches Kalim is like 250 blat in the Sidrei Tyrus, and Iolus is also around the same size. So it's very, very huge. As far as we know, he didn't get further than the first two maseches, but there's another project I just saw somebody is doing. He changed the name a little bit so people shouldn't confuse it. Instead of being called Sidrei Tyrus, I think it's called Seder Tyrus, a very, very small change. And he's doing it on the clothes, on the goyim. So you can actually get Gemara-like works on this. But Rav Chaim made it tonight. Rav Chaim gave him a haskama for Iolus on the tonight that he print on every page, like Eino Mehashas Elo Likut Midivrei HaTanoim VaMorayim. So that's why in Maseches Oelos you will see Kalim came out first. Kalim doesn't have it. In Maseches Ayolus it has it, and only Maseches Ayolus has the Haskama of Rav Chaim and the like. So, but there is no, but as a Gemara from the time of the Amoraim, we don't have. But again, as I say, most of the third parak of Chagiga is on the laws of Tumah V'Taira. At the end of the first parak of Psachim, it's a big sugi of Tumah V'Taira, so there's much, much Tumah V'Taira in the Babli. Chulin, the eighth parak of Chulin, the ninth parak of Chulin is largely about Tumas Nevela, etc. So there are huge, huge sugyas, but there is no Gemara in the Mishnayos. We don't know exactly why that would be so. So the short answer is that there aren't tractates that don't have Babli or Yerushalmi on them at all. Okay. Let's just see the next pasuk. Al Tisra Espalaf V'yazish Chaimos Lo Savam. So again, the Gra's primary interpretive tool throughout the Mishle is to always explain synonyms. And here we have two phrases for people who have anger. There is what is called a Balaf, and there is what is called Ish Chaimos Lashon of Chema. Right? So what is the difference between Af and Chema? So the Gra says that Af, which means the nose, is the beginning of anger. Kind of like it starts in the nose, and the nose starts itching a little bit. Chema is when you have your whole body is hot, right? So techilas anger, techilas kas, is called af, and that when the anger begins to express itself in an uncontrollable way, that is called chema. So based on this is the following: when somebody is a balaf, meaning he tends to get angry, but he can nip it in the bud, so to speak. He nips it in the nose. It doesn't turn into a whole big thing. So it's okay to hang around him, but don't be too much of a friend, meaning al tisra. Don't develop a closeness with him, because the friendlier you get to a person, the more their midos are going to rub off on you. So if somebody is a balaf, it is okay to have casual contact with him, because you're not going to be the victim of an explosion. But it's better to avoid friendship. But if somebody is an ish chema who explodes, don't even go near him. And that's not only because of bad midos, that's because you'll be a victim of the explosion. So in other words, it's really making two points. There are two different reasons why I should be marchik from a person who is an angry temperament. One is, I will learn from him, and the other is I will be victimized from him, and that's not a good place to be. So the Vilna Gaon says that the Baal-Af, you're less likely to be victimized by an explosion, but you do have to be concerned with learning bad midos, and therefore don't be an intimate. The Baal-Ish Chemos, You have that problem as well, but you have the other problem of you're going to be caught in the middle of an explosion. So therefore, it's better to avoid. Right? So that's the two ideas of the pasuk. Lo savo, do not even be with him, and that's really what the pasuk says. You see, and the next pasuk is written in the right. So we have an A B format here. Avoid the balaf because you will learn his bad ways, and avoid the ishchema because you will be hurt. So that's exactly what the next pasuk says. Pen te'elaf or chosav, avoid the balaf lest you learn from his ways. V'lakachta mokeshel nafshecha, and you will have a stumbling block to your soul, meaning you will be assaulted and degraded and insulted. That's going on the Yishchem, right? So this is the parallelism of A-B, right, is followed by A-B, meaning don't do A, don't do B, reason for A, reason for B, right? That's the structure of the pasuk. Okay. Let's see, again, these are short psukim. Of course, the Vilna Gaon then gives another pshat. So according to this parallelism, v'lakachta mokeshel nafshecha refers to the psychic damage you get from being around angry people. That angry people, you know, can destroy you. Right? An angry parent can destroy a child and the like. But then the Vilna Gaon gives another pshat, which is very, very fundamental, that maybe the mokesh is a spiritual punishment from Hashem. Because if you are there when an angry person is mevaza and humiliating another person, and you don't do something to stop it, your shosek, Hashem is going to hold you accountable. So in a sense, it's better not to be there. Now it's interesting that that's an Eitzah. I mean, you know, it's an interesting idea. Meaning, if there's a concept that I have an achrayas, that if an angry person is yelling and screaming and embarrassing somebody, I have an achrayas to try to stop it. And if I don't stop it, Hashem is going to punish me. Is the solution, I'm not going to hang around him, and therefore, you know, I mean, I'm not sure if that's a terrorist. I mean, if you know what's going on. So, I mean, it seems to be that, you know, you're mechuyev when you're there, but you're not mechuyev to put yourself there. But it's not so pleasant to me why that would be a spiritual solution, bidei shemayim. Giving taikacha to a person who gets angry is also extremely difficult because most of the time it'll just turn the anger onto you. I didn't hear you say it.
In a Pirbavot says that don't make a comment for when he's angry.
Yes, that's correct. Yes. That's correct. So you don't do that then, but the question is there ever a time that you can do it? So it is a very, very delicate thing. There may be a person, there may be a time where these things can be discussed, and then it would be a chesed both to the person and to the victims to discuss it. But it's delicate. It really is like brain surgery. If you're a little bit off in terms of how you say it, you might be making things a lot worse. So it's an issue. I know. I mean, people come to me sometimes about these types of problems, and they're very, 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 very difficult. Okay. Next pasuk. We'll try to just finish the perek. Al tihi betoke kaf biorvim mashaos imein lecha l'shalem lama yikach mishkavcha mitachtecha. So now Shlomo HaMelech returns to something that he talked about quite a lot in the book of Mishle. And again, in terms of Pashut Pshat, he is talking about do not be an Arev, do not be a co-signer or a guarantor of money that other people borrow. Again, let's first take it Pashut Pshat, then we'll see what else it might mean. There is a big Yetzer Hara, L'shem Shemayim even, to be an Arev. Because let's say you need money. So you go to a gemach, right? The gemach says there has to be a cosigner. I want to help you. I don't have the money to lend you. So I figure being an RA is a cost-free way of doing chesed. it's cost-free because for sure you're going to pay the Gemara. I'm just signing a piece of paper. So Shlomo HaMelech just warns us that one needs to be realistic and one needs to be wise. That you have to ask yourself this question, am I willing to lend the person this money? Now, if I'm willing to lend the person the money, then I'll be an Arif. But if I'm not willing or able to lend them the money, I should not be an Arif. Because I am chuyav al sishtadlus to make the worst case scenario assumption that I'm going to have to pay. And if I'm going to have to pay, what's going to be? I can't afford it. I mean, that was the hypothesis. I can't afford it. If I can't afford to pay, then I can't afford to be an Arif. I mean, famous last words, oh, don't worry about it, I'll pay for sure, just sign. Just sign. Right? And you'll recall that apparently Shlomo HaMelech felt very strongly about this. Because there are two or three times in the book of Mishlei where he talks about do not be an Arif. So here it says, do not be, now we'll see the difference, do not be a Tokeakap. Tokeakap is simply one of the ways an Arif would traditionally be Mechayiv himself, is he would shake his hand. In other words, lend him the money, I'll guarantee it. Tokeakap and Orvim Masha'os. A Masha'os is a loan. Orvim Masha'os. Why? Because the main lechal the shalem, because if you don't have what to pay, why should you lose your pillow? Let me talk down. Okay. So here the Gra says the following, that the lashon of the pasuk is actually very, very meduyak according to halacha. Because there is a halacha that when a creditor lends money, when I lend money to a lova, so the halacha is I'm allowed to take mashkon. If he doesn't pay me, I can take a mashkon. But if I take something he needs for the night, let's say I take his pillows or his bedding, I have to return it to him every night. And then I can keep it during the day. And if he needs something for the day, I have to. I can keep it at night, but I have to write back. This is the halacha. You literally have to give it back to him every day. Aver zok tikra, that's only true for a loiva. But for an arev loses everything.
Wow.
So it's very meduyak. He says, if you would just borrow the money, you'd get to keep your pillow at night. You don't borrow your money, you can lose your pillow, because he doesn't have to give you back your pillow even at night. But here, the Gra goes another pshat, which is, again, he developed this very much before. And again, it's a little difficult to see how this applies in the modern world. The Gra says that an arev, spiritually, can refer not to the guarantor of a loan, but somebody who takes achrayus on somebody else's avodas Hashem. So, for example, let's say one is a Rebbe, and one basically says, my job is that you, Talmidim, should daven every day, put tefillin on every day. I take the achrayus. In other words, what is an arif? I guarantee the obligations of other people. So in Ruchnius, an arif in Ruchnius is someone who has taken the achrayus for the spiritual fulfillment of the duties of other people. So Shlomo HaMelech is basically saying that if the Talmidim are people who really don't want to do mitzvahs, they don't want to serve Hashem, they want to be mirit, but you want to put yourself in the idea of being the arev that will guarantee, one should avoid that, because he says, instead of your bringing them up, they're very likely to bring you down and destroy you. And you might lose Mishkavcha, because again, Mishkavcha is a remez. The Torah is called Eishes Chayim. Eishes Chayim. Mishkavcha is the one that you sleep with. It's a remez to the Torah. Yemein lecha v'shalem, if you cannot fulfill their obligation, you will lose the Eishes Chayim, your own Eishes Chayim, meaning you will lose your own Torah, because they will drag you down. Now, the big question is, so the Vilna Gaon seems to be saying that, you know, I shouldn't learn Torah with people, you know, who are not religious, or people who are not interested, or whatever it is. And indeed, the Gemara says that it's usher to teach Torah to a Talmud she'eino hagon. So how does that work? How does that apply?
What's
hagon is not proper. So how does that apply? And Kira, right, you're learning with people who are not religious. Now you could say, well, if they come to yeshiva, then by definition they want to grow. That might be a teretz for people who come to yeshiva. But what about the situations where they don't come to yeshiva? What about them? I go to them. I go to the discotheque, right? There are rabbis, you know, they go to the place, they go to places to teach Torah to people who are maybe not initially interested, but they'll try to attract a crowd. Now, obviously, if somebody is really not interested, they're not going to sit down. In other words, what is the scenario? I mean, are we going to say, well, as soon as they sit down, they're interested and mimela? So what would this apply to? In other words, so give me a case where the Rambam Gaon's words would apply. You know, it could be, maybe if you have a captive audience, maybe, in other words, they don't want to listen. In other words, according to that, 99% of the time, anyone that goes to your shir wants to come, and Ramela, they already are nichnas into the getter of a muhugan. But be it as it may, halachically, it is difficult to apply this. But nevertheless, as a warning, it is a very important warning. In other words, there is a warning here. Now again, how we would apply it in actual halacha is not clear. But the Vilna Gaon is saying that when you're yayre to take on the achrayas of people who truly do not want to change, there is a great spiritual danger that, number one, Hashem will hold you accountable for what you fail to do for them. And number two, you would be mafsid, your own Torah learning. Because it is easier to lose a madrega than to gain a madrega. You know, they tell the story that somebody once went to the Balatanya, once went to somebody and said to one of his talmidim, he says, you're hanging around the wrong people. They're going to drag you down. They're going to be a bad hashpa. So the Talmud had a very good answer. The Talmud said, you know, Rebbe, I'm not influenced by people. I've been your Talmud for so long, and I have not been elevated so much. So they're not going to drag me down either. I'm impervious to influence. He says, I'll be what I am. So the Bala Tanya said, there's no raya at all. The fact that you didn't gain from me doesn't mean you're not going to be ruined by them. Mm-hmm. Because the pshat is, tuma is transferred by negiya b'alma. If something is tummy, and it just touches something else, that becomes tummy. But kedusha, if you have a meat of korbanos, see, the Torah uses the lashon by a korban, kol asher yiga, anything that touches the meat of the korban gets sanctified. But the Gemara explains, if chulin meat touches korban meat, it doesn't become kadosh. It has to be cooked, so the kedusha gets transferred. So in kedusha, you have to be cooked in kedusha. Then you become elevated, then you absorb it. For tuma, all you need is casual negiya b'alma. So Mimela, yeah, so good. You haven't been cooked in Kedusha. But that doesn't mean you can't touch too. So the Vilna Gaon is identifying a very real danger for those of you that Mr. Shem will go into Akira Brechaikim. Or even in the simplest scenario of guests that you have for Shabbos, even if something as simple as that, one has to be very, very careful about the negative environment that you're creating. So if they come to yeshiva, if in your home you're able to create a seviva, that's a good thing. But the Gra is saying that when you become the Arif to somebody else, you can lose your own Eishes Chayim. Lama yikach mishkavcha mitachtecha.
You say, is it dangerous to be teaching children? Meaning, it seems like maybe you can apply this case. Children are going to school, but sometimes, I mean, always against their will, but sometimes they might not want to be there and they're not interested.
Does that
effect that children can have on their
Well, it may be so. Usually, the younger the children, the less direct detrimental effect they'll have it on an adult, because an adult does not relate to the children in that way.
Like a middle school, high school thing. It seems like
it very well might be. So again, how you apply it lahalacha lemaisa mamish, I don't know. But there is a cautionary note that sometimes the idealism that I will change the world has to be tempered with realistic understanding that, you know, it may affect me in a very, very negative, in a very, very negative way. And again, without getting into stories, in the man-woman relationships, there are special complications. Again, I mean, there are rabbanim who have gotten divorced, over the fact that they were trying to help women in need. And what happened was, an emotional relationship developed. Right? Can you imagine? So even something so much l'shem shemayim as that can create difficult complications. Yeah.
And the question is, two different rabbis tell me a different answer. I think it could come up to anybody. So I have my own feeling, but I was on a plane and the girl next to me is, maybe it makes a difference if she's religious or not, so religious, but one rabbi told me that maybe I have an obligation of kiruv. Maybe, I don't know what that means. Another rabbi, it made a lot of sense to me, the second rabbi said, if she'd ask you what time it is, you could be polite, but I don't talk to the girls, so.
Yeah, I would say that not to engage in conversation, but be polite. And the hope would be that in your politeness, there can be a kiddush Hashem. And that, in fact, can be the case. Because, you know, I was going to say, the fact that you stayed in your seat, whether that's good or not, I'm not going to opine. But as you know, there is a big, big issue in which, and it's been on the news and newspapers, how from people have delayed takeoff of El Al flights because they're standing in the aisle, they're refusing to sit next to a woman, etc., and they've held up flights for an hour, as it were. So if you can contribute in minimizing some of the chilul Hashem, that itself contributes to kiruv in a positive way. Okay. Now then the grass has another pshat, yet another pshat, that instead of saying toke kaf as referring to an arev, he says toke kaf refers to people who make a lot of vows. I'm sorry, it's sigufim. What are sigufim? So again, there's not, well, maybe some people still do. Sigufim are physical afflictions. There was a mahalich among some tzaddikim, some mekubalim, that in order to have kapara for their averos, or to break their taivas, they would actually physically afflict themselves. They would fast long periods of tanesim. Some of them would sleep in the snow, whatever it would be. And this is the idea of sigufim. And in different times, there was such an avaida of some tzaddikim. The Grab at Derech Klal, which was the Litvish tradition, was very against it. And again, it's based on Chazal. Chazal say, if a person is Yoshev from Nazir, right? The Nazir is a Chaytei because he's depriving himself of Yayin. And Rabbi Elazar HaKapper says, Kal v'chomer to me she Yoshev b'tainis, as it were. So the Gra often says Sigufim is not the right way. So he says that Alti b'toke kaf, meaning don't make promises of sigufim, and arvim masuais is, and don't make nedarim to learn a lot of masechtas. He says, don't make promises. Now again, if one says beli neder,
beli neder.
Don't make any nedarim. Don't make nedarim. Meaning, don't make nedarim. I mean, that's good advice, even in our auction. Saying nobody, it's everything is beli neder. And the reason is, the Gemara says, very, very powerfully, the Gemara says, the Avayin Nedarim Ishtei Shaladam Mesa, God forbid, for the sin of not keeping Nedarim, a person's wife and children can die. Chas v'shalom. And that's what the Pasuk says, Emein Lecha L'shalem, if one does not fulfill their vow, Lama yikach mishkavcha. Why should a person put himself in the matzav? Where ishtei shaladam mesa. So quite literally, do not be rugel b'nedarim. And again, Shlomo HaMelech says it even more befeirish in Koheles, where he says, Toi vasher lo sidor. It is better not to make a neder. Meshetidor volot shalem, than making a neder that you're not going to pay. But the Gemara explains, making a neder even if you pay is better not to make the neder, because eventually you'll come to a masa where you're not going to or you're not going to pay, right? So a person should not be ragil b'nedarim. Of course, Yaakov Avinu made a neder in this part. Yaakov Avinu made a neder, okay? But it says b'yei sarah you can make, and if you're really, really b'yei sarah, so you need to tell Hashem how serious you are. So there is a makom for neder, but even then it's brought down that unless you're a tzaddik, that's batuach, that you know you will do everything possible. One should not be ragil b'nedarim. The Pnei Yeshua, I have to look at Bakdam. I haven't looked in Bakdam in many years. I think he made a neder. In other words, you know, there's a whole story in Bakdam of the Pnei Yeshua. He was a rav in Frankfurt, and he was caught in an awful fire in a big courtyard, like a chutzner, a big chutzner in Frankfurt. And the conflagration and the buildings were collapsing and stories were collapsing. It was all wood. And many, many people died, and he was like stuck in a room. He couldn't get out. And I think he made an edit that if a Kodesh Baruch Hu will be matzil him, he will write his chidushim on Shas. And then he says, all of a sudden there was like an opening, and he was nitzel b'derech neis, and that is how he wrote the Pnei Yehoshua. Was it an? I think it was an edit. I have to check, but he made the promise to the Ribbono Shel Olam. What do they say? They say before the Pnei Yehoshua started writing, to be sure that everything would be eisgehalten and everything would be consistent, he went through Shas 35 times just to prepare himself for writing. So that means every line that was written, he had all of Shas in his mind as he wrote every line, to be sure that everything was consistent with everything in Shas. That's the Pnei Yehoshua.
35 times,
yeah. Now, he may have learned Shas 1,000 times, I don't know, but, this was 35 times just before he started writing the Pnei, the Pnei Yeshua. What someone once asked Rebbe Yeshua, a worker in the house, once asked Rebbe Yeshua how many times he learned Shas. So Rebbe Yeshua just said, well, more times than you think. Okay.
Alright. Yeah. I heard that it's actually because you could. To say, I will do this mitzvah, let's say, one of the early minyan, and if I don't come, then I'll give $10 to charity. Is that a neder? That's good.
That would be good, but you still have to do a b'li neder, meaning to say, because you don't even know you'll be able to remember to give the money. So in other words, what you're saying is making a condition. I understand the svara, because you're saying it's giving $10 is always within my power. But even then, it's better. It's not even good to make a net, I'm going to give $10, because you know, you might forget, or may not have the money that day, or whatever it is. Okay. So we have two different interpretations. Is this referring to guarantors? Well, we have monetary guarantors, we have spiritual guarantors, and then we have the general idea of making promises and the like. Then we have another pasuk, two more pasukim. Al tasek v'vul eilam asher asu avisacha. Do not cross the gavul eilam. Now, eilam over here means not world, but eternity, meaning the eternal boundaries that your forefathers have made. So the Gra connects this really to his last pshat, meaning don't be eager in taking on new commitments that you might not be able to keep, but at the same time, be careful and respectful to keep the boundaries and the siyagim of the Friyadik Adairis. Don't be mezalzel in the old minhagim. Meaning the minhagim of Am Yisrael have a chachma and a kedusha, and one should not treat them in a disrespectful way. So it's kind of a contrast to that. The Ramah brings, in Hilchos Purim, he brings the minhag of making noise, stamping your foot when Haman's name is mentioned. And apparently some people didn't like that minhag. Some people don't like it today because, you know, there are problems with the minhag. The Baal Koreh, you know, it might go on and you know, you don't hear a word, which is very important not to miss a word, or it just takes longer, right? Some people don't like, you know, kids' minions because it takes so long with all the extra noise. So apparently, even in the Ramah's time, some people were saying, why do we have to do this? Let's just read the Megillah straight. So the Ramah says not to be mezalzel in the minhagim of Yisrael, because even if we don't know who established it, it had its shayrish in Kedusha. And of course, in this case, it's actually a fulfillment of Mechias Amalek on some level. You're eradicating or erasing, drowning out Amalek. So this pasuk is quoted, I don't know if the Ramah quotes this pasuk, but other pasuk can quote this pasuk generally. The idea of following Minhagei Yisrael. Minhagei Yisrael have a certain chashivas that one should respect. Something is a minhag, it doesn't just mean, oh, it's only a minhag. But al tasig gavul aylam asher asu avosecha. And then we have the final pasuk. Chazisa ish maher bimlachto lifnei malachim yisyatsev bal yisyatsev lifnei chashukim. First of all, a little word here. The Medrash on Mishle, is that, maybe you've seen this phrase. Have you ever seen the phrase? People read it incorrectly, because people read it Medrash Chazis. There's a Medrash called Medrash Chazis. That's how everybody reads it, but that's not correct. It's called Medrash Chazita. That's how you read it. And I say Chazis because most people are going to read it when they see it in a Sefer. Medrash Chazis, Medrash Chazisa, is the Medrash on Mishle. There is a Medrash on Mishle, and it's called Medrash Chazisa because it happens to begin with this pasuk. In other words, it goes in order, but it begins with this pasuk. And the pasuk says, if you see Chazisa, if you see a man, Maher Bimlachto, Maher is quick, but it means skillful in doing his malacha, he will stand in front of kings, he will be honored and elevated, he will not stand in front of those who live in darkness, chashukim. Now the Gra connects this back to the idea of who you hang around with, meaning the Gra apparently did have some issues, you might say some issues with teaching Torah to those who are not interested. He gave us cautionary notes. So he says, when you see a man who is skillful in his work, now what is our work in life? Our work in life is Avodas Hashem and Limud Torah. If you see a person who is skillful in getting that work done, that is because he connects to the Malachim, he connects to Talmidei Chachamim, and he does not connect to those who live in darkness. In other words, this is not a consequence, this is a reason. This is not saying, because he's skillful, he'll be honored by the kings. That's the Pashut Pshat. But rather, if he's skillful, it is because he connects to Talmidei Chachamim and not to those who live in darkness. Again, it's that cautionary note. Now, what that would mean, Lamaisa, is the following. Let's say a person is devoted to the great mitzvah of Kiruv Rechaikim, which is a great mitzvah, but a person still has to have a kesher to the Talmidei Chachamim of the door, to the Gedolim, to a Rebbe. In other words, one should not just go off on his own, and because it does happen. What actually does happen is that the person tends to adopt a world view that is very more and more comparable to those of the people that he's working with. Right, we like to think we're not going to get influenced. In fact, we get influenced in many, many, many ways. So therefore, the key to that is that even when you are involved in a world of people that are very far from Torah, you still have to be connected to the Torah world in one way or the other. By your Rebbe, by connected to a Gadol, by going to a yeshiva, even if it's once a week. Let's say, you know, you go to a yeshiva, you to have a seder of learning on a higher level than might be necessary for the students. Again,
14 years.
No, I mean, the big Yetzirah is that if a person works in Kiruv, granted, the people are intelligent, but you don't have to learn every concise, you don't have to learn a Ramban Be'in to be able to give a beginning Gemara Shir. Although it wouldn't hurt, as a matter of fact, it would make the beginning Shir much better, actually. But they're not going to be aware of that. Right? In other words, there's a lot of things you can do that shortcuts that they won't know. Right? They'll never know. But what happens is a person loses his own Madragas. So therefore, if you want to be Maher Bimlachto, you want to be skillful and diligent in doing Melechas Shamayim, you still need to be connected to Malachim. Man Malchi, who are the true Malachim? Are Rabbanan, Talmidei Chachamim. You can't give up your own growth in Ruchniyah. What do they say? They say a very nice vort. The Gemara says in Chulin about a liver. You know, liver has a lot of blood. That's why you cannot salt liver, because you can't take out all the blood. You can only broil it, because the broiling takes out the blood. But salt, right? I can salt chicken, I can salt beef, but I cannot salt liver. But it mentions that there is a side benefit to that. The fact that liver gives out so much that if while I'm broiling liver, a drop of milk might fall on the liver, we actually have a rule that says, since the liver is so busy giving out, it's giving out, I eat a treaty lemiflat. It's polate. It's not bolea, because it's too busy being polate. So they say that that's a tremendous remes. It's a remes, but derech drush, to the dilemma of the makarev. One is so busy giving out that they're no longer absorbing ruchnius and Torah. Now the problem with that is, if you're giving out, giving out, giving out, and nothing is replenishing, so eventually you become empty. So what happens when you hit empty, right? If there's no source of inspiration that is renewing your ruchnius, then at some point there'll be nothing left to give, right? So that's called burnout. And the phrase burnout is a very evocative phrase. But sometimes a person can be burnt out and not even know it. Sometimes a person knows it. I'm burnt out. And sometimes a person, you know, kind of just acculturates himself to that and is in fact burnt out, but doesn't even know that they're burnt out. Right? So that's really what these psukim are saying. So you can't take a word from the Gra or even a single pasuk in Mishlei and give a halacha from it, because everything has to be considered in its totality. For example, in fact, Shlomo HaMelech was merambis to that himself, because we had in the middle of the Sefer two psukim, one after the other. One says, do not answer a fool according to his foolishness. And the other pasuk says, answer a fool according to his... And my mom is opposite of psukim, one after the other. And the short answer is, because sometimes yes, sometimes no, meaning certain foolish people don't even talk to, because they're not going to respond. Other people, maybe you can make progress. In other words, what that is teaching me, that's a big mafteach, and that is that the psukim are telling you things to be aware of and sensitive to, but they're not necessarily telling you absolute usher mutter, because things have to be balanced with everything else. So I think we can take away from here the cautionary idea of being careful to safeguard your own Yiddishkeit, but not necessarily telling a person, don't go into Kiruv. But again, as I say, there. If you go to Or LaGola, for example, you know, these issues are discussed. You know, college campuses. I mean, there are environments that are frankly high risk environments. High risk environments are okay maybe for some people, and are not okay for other people. And one has to know exactly where they would fit along that spectrum. Okay, well, have a good week.
Thank you.
Okay.
One of the running